This episode uncovers how to handle holiday scheduling with your ex. Here's how to thrive, not just survive.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week, we had Alex and Amanda from Dirty Laundry Divorce Podcast on the show, and we had a great conversation about navigating the holidays in divorce, creating an agreement that works for you and your family, and managing unique co-parenting challenges during the holidays. I hope this episode is valuable to anyone who might be listening. Stay tuned for the full episode. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, Alex Howard and Amanda Silver are joining us. Alex and Amanda are both mediators and together host Dirty Laundry Divorce Podcast. They are also international guests joining us from Ontario, Canada today. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. We're so delighted to be here.
Well, I am so happy to have you. And today, Alex and Amanda and I will be discussing navigating the holidays in divorce, building an effective parenting plan with the holidays in mind, and managing unique co-parenting challenges during the holidays. So we've got lots to discuss, ladies. And first, I would love for our listeners, for you each to share a little bit about yourself and how you got to this place in family law and mediators and your podcast. I mean, that might take up the whole show, but
that is a whole show, I think, but I'll try and sum mine up pretty quickly. Okay. So I came by this by going through divorce. I went through divorce. I was in education before, and then I went through my own divorce, and I thought, you know what, there's got to be a better way than going to court and going through lawyers, and, you know, there's got to be a more amicable, lower conflict way to do this. And so mediation kind of found me, and I then went into it and found Alex through that process, and we decided to start a podcast together.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a child of divorce myself, not personally divorced, but got into the work and realized that there's such a lack of information and so much misinformation out there. Mm-hmm. And the cost of getting the wrong information is so high. So that was sort of the impetus for the podcast. How can we, you know, educate the masses, empower women, make the right choices, not the emotional one, and do that through educating and storytelling.
Well, that is wonderful. And I have listened to the podcast, and for our listeners, you ought to listen to it too, even though it is, you know, in Canada, so much of everything you talk about really applies. It doesn't matter that you're in a different country, because a lot of it are just great things to be thinking about. And you are able to add a little levity to a very heavy, difficult situation, which is important. And I know appreciated by all your listeners as well.
Thank you.
Now, today, we're discussing all things holidays, which, you know, encompass a lot, of course, yeah, and how to be successful in navigating co-parenting during the holidays. So, you know, we're talking about fall and winter holidays. Mm-hmm. So that'll be great. But first, since you both are mediators, but each have your own practice, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, correct. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit. Is mediation required in Canada?
So that's a very good question. It's not exactly mandated, but it's encouraged. So when you go to, if you do put a court application in and you go to a case conference, you will be asked most likely if you've gone to mediation, if you've tried it. So for some people, it's a tick the box kind of process, mm-hmm, but for others, it can be a real like lifesaver in that it saves them from, you know, a nasty court battle.
Got it. Now, I have a question for you, because my impression as listening to some of your podcast episodes, mm-hmm, is that maybe you meet with people more than once. It's like not just everybody here. We show up for 8 hours, maybe 12 hours, and in and done. Very exhausting for everybody involved. Yeah. Some days, 2 days in a row, but it's very much that way. It is not like ongoing.
Right.
And
it's
so I'd love to understand a little bit as far as how you guys work. with that?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different. So Amanda sits on the court roster, so she will meet with clients one often and done. In private practice, it is slightly different, whereby mm-hmm. I'm meeting with mine typically 60 to 90 minutes, probably once, maybe twice a week, depending on how quickly they want to expedite things. Okay. But it is an ongoing relationship. And we really push this whole idea of don't make a decision today because you're too in the thick of it. It's too difficult to mm-hmm. make the right choice. So sit with it, take the time, let's revisit certain issues that maybe are more contentious and give folks an opportunity to really understand what they are committing to. Because it is hard to go back once you've signed.
And you're if you do, if I've been in the process where I've seen the full day, and after hour three or four or five, you're not even thinking yeah. straight. You just want to get it done, and you come home and you're like, what did I agree on?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and so in Canada, what's I think is, you know, a good thing is that you have a year, right? Mm-hmm. So I know in different states you can file for divorce faster, but in Canada, you have to wait at least 1 year from your date of separation to get your divorce. So in that year, so much can happen, yeah. so right. much discussion, so much negotiation, and it really gives you the time to really make those informed decisions.
And I agree with you. We've, you know, after doing it for so many years as the attorney, and I learned this relatively early on in my practice, but it wasn't until like I really thought of it from the client's point of view, right? Had a great mediator that we like to use. So both sides had their attorneys just because he was efficient, right? And I mean, I just feel like for our clients, they're paying the mediator, their attorney, and it goes, you know, on forever. And what happened was, you know, we'd spent hours and hours coming to all of the things agreed to. So then they go off to draft. Mm. Well, and then, you know, he had been drafting along, had his assistant. So that didn't take terribly long. But now we're reading through it. And it's like, yep, yep, yep. That was very, very difficult for my client that, you know, she brought to my attention later. And then I realized, okay, let's look at it from their perspective. We've spent 6 hours coming to terms with all of this. And now I'm going to ask her within an hour to read it and sign it. So it really made me take more of a pause and make sure they fully, you know, understood all of the parts. It still is within a day, unless it's too overwhelming. And then we're like, we've got to leave. She can't, she's in no, you know, state to sign this right now.
Yeah. And good for you for advocating on her behalf to say this is not appropriate for her to sign. She is not, you know, in a mm-hmm. position to actually agree to these things. Because I think that's half the battle, too. We want to end things. Some of these divorces go on for so long. We want to give finality to our clients. But at what cost?
Yeah. And because there's always that second guessing. And as you know, in mediation, if it's successful, it's give and take. It's not your best day in court, which is so unrealistic. And it's also not your worst. And where I have seen more, the majority of clients have difficulty is then explaining to their parents, maybe not everything that happened because they're not supposed to, it's all confidential, but the end result and their parents are so, they don't understand. And now they're mad, the client's then upset, oh, what did I do? And that's a tricky area I have found to really help the client explain. And if necessary, if they're like, will you please explain to my dad, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Why I chose that instead of this. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or that number instead of that number. And it is so hard to.
Yeah. And there's a lot of familial involvement, right? The greater family of origin really has a lot to say. And
lots of opinions
there. A lot of advice that's maybe not actually helpful often.
It is. And also, I think this would be normal because I'm certain I would be this way, right? They have more anger at the ex than maybe their daughter does, right? Because they're in that protection mode, right? Of their, like, so that doesn't always help. either.
No, yes.
Exactly. Their protection is wonderful, but not in the minutia of coming up with agreements. Just be there as a support person, not as, you know, my advisor.
Yeah. Or questioning why they did what they did. That's so hard for the client because they're already, even if they feel like they entered into, they're always going to question that, I think, especially regards to the children or the money and did I do the right thing? It's, you know, because it's such a finality that I think it sticks with them. Yeah. And I know we kind of got on a side road, but I wanted to, because I had on the podcast a mediator, you know, earlier this year, and she did it that same way. And she's like, no, we might meet for a month or two and, you know, give small information, small decisions at a time. And I was kind of blown away because I'd never heard of it doing it that way. But I'm like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And we couldn't imagine doing it in one day.
No, like, these are the most important decisions that you'll ever make about your children, about your financial future. Like, how can you possibly be expected to make it in such haste and under such pressure and make, you know, really good informed decisions? So, yeah, I can't imagine, you know, being put to that sort of clock, that clock ticking away and having to make those decisions.
It can be a long day. Yeah. Certainly. We've ended at 1 or 2 in the morning, which again is not the time you should be signing things, but that's neither here nor there because that's just the way it is around here. Yeah. So we do our best.
And that does happen a lot in negotiations with lawyers here. So if you're up against a trial starting tomorrow and there's settlement discussions, you might be up till 2 a.m. with going back and forth with offers. So that definitely happens here too. But we take this slower pace in mediation.
And I will say, and I'm not saying it's always good. However, I do appreciate the existence of a deadline and the existence of some type of pressure to end this, right? Yeah. Because often, and I would say both clients, you know, it almost becomes part of what they're doing now. And it's just the back and forth, back and forth. And even though they say they want to end, their behaviors don't, you know, necessarily resemble that. And so it's kind of good to be like, no, we are under the gun. And it is it's final decision time.
Some will drag it on if they're not over it. Maybe it wasn't their choice to end the relationship and they want to maintain that connection, or it's vendetta, vindictiveness of I'm going to make you suffer for as long as possible. I mean, there's so many motivating factors.
Power balance, you know, I'm going to hold on to my financial information until you force it out of me just because I can. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just there's so many aspects to it.
And that's where we come in and we say, no, no. Like, we've waited long enough for financial disclosure, for example. It's now or never.
Yeah.
Like, we also have a standard of, we're going to let you go if you're not interested in coming to the table, right? Mediation is voluntary. And if you're not ready to take a seat to the table and negotiate in good faith, off you go.
Yeah, because it's a waste of time and money for everybody involved.
Exactly. Yeah, silly. Exactly.
Now, in your practice, though, do people generally settle in mediation?
Yeah, actually, I was just telling Amanda, actually, before we logged on, I had a file recently. We negotiated 99% of everything. There was one tiny clause. They just simply could not agree. They went back to their lawyers, got some independent legal advice, came back, and they're like, good, we're good, and signed, and we moved on. So, yeah, I often do tell people that just because you get stuck, you know, there's an impasse on one part of this, we don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We can sort of piecemeal it all together. But I would say more than often, they do. And we're motivated to help them get there. So we're encouraging a settlement as the goal, as opposed to sort of an adversarial process where we're just trying to get everything for one client. We do kind of want a bit of that, not happy ending, obviously, as you alluded to. It is
an
a
ending.
Settlement, but it is
a reasonable ending.
Maybe not everyone's, you know, tickled by it, but they can live with it.
And also, if the alternative, which we do inform our clients, is if you want to go to court, get in line. I mean, there's you might have to wait a year before there's anything actually actionable done. So not to mention the cost. So, I mean, of course, that's everyone's right if they want to. But for the most part, most people, you know, come to some type of agreement.
Yeah.
Yes, that's good. And that's our experience as well. Overall, I mean, we are litigators and we do have cases that go to trial, but less and less, we found, I think back compared to when I was, you know, first practicing, which has been way too many years. But so let's talk about holiday scheduling because it's a big deal. And I do think it's so important, right? So this episode is really focused on, hey, how are you going to get those schedules done? You have children. It's important, but there's so many things to think of. You probably can't think of everything. And then, you know, how rigid do you make it? So I'd love to know y'all's approach to the holiday scheduling and a parenting plan, and how you help folks navigate that.
Yeah, I mean, the holidays are definitely a big issue. And I think one thing that I always suggest is prepare in advance. So you don't want to end up, it's December 23rd, you haven't figured out who's getting Christmas Eve and Christmas morning. And guess what? Your lawyer, your mediator, your social worker, your, anybody who's involved is not answering because they're off doing their own thing. And then you're in a crisis mode. And then, you know, you've ruined the holiday basically for yourself and possibly for your family. So I think really get ahead of it. Think about these things in advance. Work with a professional who can actually see these things coming. And I think the amount of, you know, detail is really dependent on the family. We have some who are just like, oh, we'll figure it out. We always have, no problem. Great. And then there's others who really need it down to the minute, like pickups at 12 o'clock, you know, on Christmas Day, you know, or 9 o'clock or, you know, 9:15. It has to be written out.
Yeah. It's it really is client dependent. It's dependent on what holidays they observe and celebrate. So we certainly look at it twofold. Every separation agreement that Amanda and I do in our practices has a holiday schedule built out that overrides the regular parenting schedule. So we sort of do that. We figure out what your regular parenting schedule is, and then we parse out the holidays. And we do use the Christian holidays, the Catholic holidays, the Jesus holidays, as they are what our public school system is based on.
Right.
But even with that, we're looking at Christmas break, which up here is 2 weeks, and then we're actually pulling out the religious holidays, the days of celebration, the Christmas Eve, the Christmas Day, the Boxing Day, that sort of thing, when everybody is off. And so keeping those two separate, again, we always try and start with, let's do the easy thing. So if you got 2 weeks off, you each get a week. That seems easy enough. Okay, now let's get into the harder stuff.
Yeah.
And again, to Amanda's point, if the clients don't really celebrate a certain holiday, it's easy. That's when we kind of get into the horse trading. Okay, well, if you don't care so much about Thanksgiving, but you really care about Easter, well, let's, you know, look at that. Christmas obviously is a major player in everyone who celebrates lives. And it's so rooted in tradition and, you know, all of these experiences that
the emotions that
so
people attach, the emotional value of it. Is so deep, right?
And it starts on November 1st. We're already bombarded with stores, you know, displaying all this stuff. So it's being pushed, this messaging constantly of, oh, this major big holiday is coming up. So for those listening, as this holiday is approaching, and maybe this is your first one, just be kind to yourself. Be really gentle, because it is going to be exceptionally hard. And plan for that, you know, manage your expectations.
Yeah, I think that it is, it's almost overwhelming. And I think, and I don't know, I would say, I think a part of me thinks the younger your kids are, it might be harder, but I think it's just difficult regardless, because it is a time of togetherness that is now going to have to be split in half.
Yeah. And the first one, I think, is always the hardest. The first holiday with, you know, post-separation, because it's going to be different. And different is hard. And it might be that the kids are not with you Christmas morning, or they're not with you for Hanukkah, or they're not with you for something. And it's hard on you, but it's also hard on them. And so remember that. It's not just you going through this. It's your kids too, right? Sometimes we forget that, like, you know, oh, they're resilient. They're young. They'll be fine. They'll be happy. They're getting presents. They're also noticing a change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's difficult. And then especially if, because inevitably there is, and it just depends, right, how far away there. There's going to be a travel, a transfer, probably on Christmas Day or maybe Christmas Eve or the day after. And I spent many years, my brother and I, in the airport, right, waiting for the flight to go see my dad or coming back to see my mom. And so Yeah, a lot goes on with all that. And that's just like, you know, even, and that's just the day of, but I think that's such a great point. It starts now, like with all of the things and as a family, traditions that you did. And now, how are you going to deal with that? Who gets to do what?
Right. And I think, Heather, actually, you make such a good point, right? In your experience, I'm guessing you, obviously your parents were far apart. So there was airport, there was travel, there was that. So in that instance, if you at the time, if your parents were my clients, I would maybe suggest alternating years, though very difficult not to see your kids at all over the holidays. To Amanda's point, putting yourself in their shoes and imagining them spending the majority of Christmas Day, let's say, in an airport alone, essentially. So is that really in their best interest? Yes, you're going to be sad not to see them. But as the parent, it is your job to put them first. And so what is their experience going to be like? So again, this is where mediators and professionals can remind you of that. Well, what is actually in the best interest? What do you want to do? And so maybe if you're not with your kids that year, maybe that's the year you go on vacation yourself, right? Change of scenery, mix it up so that you're not bombarded with an empty house and a Christmas tree and no kids. Like, that's gutting. And so what can you do to protect yourself? So change of scenery, I think, is kind of low-hanging fruit, but really keeping the focus on the kids and what's in their best interest. And so when we do spend a lot of time and a lot of hours with our families, we're able to really understand their needs and then support them in terms of making the right decision for the family unit, not just maybe for them individually.
Now, what and this brings me to my next question. You kind of answered, but I really want it to be specific for our listeners, because what advice do you have for women when negotiating the holidays that they get versus, you know, their ex? Because, I mean, you know, and I am obviously, we're pro women and, you know, quite biased, but, and a mother myself, married, like, we do everything, right? And so we do on the holidays. Yes. So how do you help them deal with this, right? Because they've done everything all these years.
It's hard, right? It's hard to sort of relinquish some of that control, right? So you've always have, okay, this is when we're going to open our presents. This is what our tree's going to look like. This is what, who's coming over. This is the dishes I'm going to serve. And right, it tends, traditionally, the woman is the one who is sort of at the center of the household and is doing those types of things and organizing everything. And then you get into, you know, if you're in a more traditional relationship, but then you get into a divorce situation where it's like, wait a second, I got to split this up now. Yep. I'm not in charge of the, you know, Christmas morning brunch. That's, he's going to have to figure it out. And it's not going to be the way I had it last year or the way I've had it for the last 5 years. It's not going to be, we're not going to be in our matching pajamas, but it's going to be different, but different is okay.
Yes. Different doesn't have to be bad, but yeah, that's a really good point. Relinquishing some of that control or even some of those expectations, right? When you get into a marriage and you have children and you plan for what your future is going to look like, and divorce strips us of that planned future. And it forces us to reexamine and reimagine what the future is going to be. So again, taking that time to just say, you know what, this is my first holidays, my first Christmas without my kids. It's going to suck. So what am I going to do? How am I going to let go of all of those expectations? And so a plan is always the best one. Get a plan, have a support person. If you know you're, you know, really extroverted and you gather strength and happiness by being with people, accept those holiday invitations. Go to, you know, your sister's house and be with your nieces and nephews and be surrounded by family. If you know that putting on a smile and putting on a nice outfit is going to be the hardest thing you can imagine doing, stay home and maybe phone a friend and have them come by if you need it, you know? So, but have a plan and understand what your needs are. As you said, we do everything and we do everything for everyone else. It's rare that we stop and go, huh, what do I need this holiday? Do I really need to stress out about these dishes I'm going to prepare? Or are we going to order pizza and sit on the couch in our matching pajamas, right? So just taking the pressure off of everything maybe you have historically done and traditionally done and going, well, this year is going to be what it's going to be, but I'm going to manage my expectations and I'm going to plan something so that you're not waking up on Christmas morning in that empty house and unable to maybe even get out of bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the plan is difficult as it sounds, or, you know, or like, how am I going to do that? at least start thinking in that way so that you can begin to prepare yourself, especially, but because it's going to be different regardless.
Regardless.
And so let's talk about that. Like, okay, let's say you are separated because obviously you've got to be separated in Canada for a year and now it's approaching, but nobody's talked about it. And, you know, here we have Thanksgiving. I know you guys have something similar. That's kind of what, you know, begins the, I think, the, you know, big family holidays, which is also stressful just in and of itself, let alone, you know, you're separated. How, you know, what would you say to these individuals, you know, anyone listening when they're like, I don't even know where to begin?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I think it's, let's start with where the kids are going to be, because I think there's two parts to this. It's, you know, in the past, you've gone with your husband, let's say, to his parents' house or his cousin's house. And this year, maybe you're not invited because you are going through a separation. But I think first, let's start with where are the kids going to be. So let's figure out, maybe it's an email. Maybe it's an email to your ex, because it's hard to have those conversations in person. It's, you know, I really want to get ahead of this holiday. I know it's going to be hard, but where are the kids going to be for this holiday? What are you thinking? You know, throw out a proposal. You know, I'm suggesting that they're 2 hours with me, 3 hours with you, whatever, what have you.
Right.
Throw out some type of proposal and then try and figure out, well, where are we going to be?
Yeah. And I think because we have that year of separation, even if you're cohabitating after separation, you're still not maybe going with your ex and the children to her parents' house. Right. So you're staying home while they go do that family side of things. And then they stay home while you take the kids and go do your family side of things. So you almost get a bit of a trial run. And so what I love to encourage clients is, let's do an interim plan. This is like a dress rehearsal. Yeah. For your future before you really commit. So let's put in a really loose framework about what that looks like. And so maybe if you aren't going to be on a moving forward basis, waking up with the kids on Christmas morning, maybe that's when you have to stay in bed and you have to hear them downstairs doing whatever. And yes, is that torture? Of course. I'm not, you know, a Pollyanna about this, but it's a great way to test out. Manage again those expectations and go, you know what, this actually really worked with you taking the kids over here and me taking the kids over there. Let's do that moving forward. And knowing that one day we'll be living in two different houses. And so we can do this sort of back and forth and that will get easier. But what a great opportunity to test drive something out and realize, oh, that did not work. I cannot survive that. This has now become more important and I'm going to advocate harder for whatever this is because I know that the alternative is unbearable. So again, just being able to test that out and listen, not everyone has the ability to communicate with their ex as I'm describing. And so that does come into play. And again, that's where maybe a mediator or a third party can hopefully help out with those types of conversations. But, you know, we are in the land of email and text. And so if you can't meet face to face, figure it out some other way. There's so many ways to communicate that we, you know, you should be able to at some point manage that.
I think that's a great idea. I love that because try it out and you're in the beginning. So maybe it is half the day with you, half the day with me. Let's see if that feels like that was good for the kids or on Thanksgiving, too much food and they hated it. Or on Christmas.
Too much driving or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And on Christmas or through Hanukkah, like they just don't want to leave all their new stuff. So how do we... You know, they're especially the littler ones. Like you, and you can't like take the Barbie townhouse, you know, with you. So it's like, it's got to stay there. That thing is massive or whatever else they got.
I've experienced the exact thing. Yeah. It's hard. They're sitting there. They have all the presents. It's like, guess what? Now you're going to go to dad's. You're going to have presents there too. But it's like, well, I don't want to leave.
It's right. Like, or they want to take their new favorite thing, but yet. You're like, oh, but what if it doesn't come back? And then you're going to be sad, which, so I think looking at this first holiday, if you can, as just like, let's test this. And if you're able, right? That's the hard part. Like we're talking and some people are listening going, whatever I suggest, he's going to say no. So I love what you said, Alex. Just say it, put it out there for him. What are you thinking? What are you thinking we ought to do? Because I found that works much better than suggesting, because their first response often is no.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what you suggest. That's not what we want to do.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no reason why, again, as we, as moms, as women who are, you know, historically the ones organizing all of the things, there's no reason why we can't just say, cool, what are you thinking? What's your plan?
Yeah. And they might return with saying, actually, I don't really know. What do you think? Great. And then that puts sort of the power back in your hands, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also think an important part, as you were talking, Heather, is communicating what's going to happen to your kids, right? So it's like, if you've made this plan about sharing the holidays, let them know in advance so that they have it in their back of their mind that, okay, I'm with mom till 4 o'clock and then dad's going to come pick me up. It's not a surprise. Yeah. You know, they're not going to be disappointed that they don't have more time with cousins. They know what's coming. Kids need that structure. Yes.
Agreed. That's brilliant. Yeah.
And I do think, you know, yeah, for our listeners, that so important and one of the most difficult things is make it a positive. Make it a positive for them. And even if you're like feeling the exact opposite, because that's what you would want your husband to do. And I think you guys should try to say, this is so exciting. We're going to be here. I'll be here when you get back, you know? Yeah. And I think that, I don't know, let me ask you this, because I bet you've had this come up. It just popped in my head. So they got the brand new Barbie doll, right? I'm just probably reliving my childhood, and they want to take it with them.
Yes.
And, you know, don't you think you should encourage that? Just don't make big issues out of things that really don't need to be a big issue.
Yes. This is such a good one, and I've seen it so many times in my practice. I mean, my personal, you know, opinion is let them take it with them. This is theirs, right? Yeah. It's not, they didn't choose this. They didn't choose to have two separate homes. They didn't choose to have two separate Barbie dream houses. That's not what they chose. This is an adult decision that was made with their parents. Right. And so, like, let them take the, you know, the Barbie with them. Let them take the stuffed animal. Like, at the end of the day, who really cares? It's a material thing and it means something to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And people get so hung up on those things. Well, I bought it, so it should stay in my house, right? No, I bought that sweatshirt. It should stay in my house. You know what? The kids want it. Like, at the end of the day,
I do think, and that's very hard for so many parents. So I know you guys have heard it. And then it never comes back. And does they get to wear it? And it's just, some of those are the things that you have to let go, which are difficult for our clients.
And a lot of that is ego. And it's putting yourself and your anger or your hurt at the forefront instead of placing the kids at the forefront. And again, that's our job, is to constantly remind, okay, well, how is your kid going to be impacted by that decision? Is that worth it? And pick your battles is such a great line, because honestly, everything is going to be a battle.
Yes.
If you make it one. Mm-hmm. So choose what are you, you know, really wanting to fight for, and what can you just let go, because the peace is such a better gift than whatever else the fight is going to get you.
It is. Now, how do you combat, you know, how do you help certainly with your clients with, I'm sure you still use the same phrase, even though we're very close to Disney, but like the Disney World dad, you know, and their one spouse overdoing it on gifts. And it just feels, if you're the one who's not, like, so unfair, or, oh my gosh, right? Like, I can't believe they did that. And I'm certain you guys have encountered those kind of
conversations. Without a doubt. I call that the divorce guilt, where you're just showering your kids with everything and anything. And listen, I do believe sometimes it comes from an altruistic place. You know they're hurting. You know that this is difficult. You want to take the pain away. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's a one-upmanship about your ex. And that's, again, a different story. But so one of the things that is not a horrible idea that I have used in the past is set a limit on what you're going to spend over that holiday or over that particular birthday, even a child's birthday, right? Another great opportunity to show up the other parent. Mm-hmm. And so we write that right into the agreement. Again, depending on how sort of conflicted they are and how adversarial they are. So very much case specific, but you think $500 is appropriate to spend at Christmas? Great. we'll call that, you know, what it is, because that is not a Section 7 or what do you, I don't know what you folks call it in the States. Extracurriculars, right? You have sort of the child support and then anything that's above that. So that's not a shared expense that you would be reconciling. So having, you know, an upper limit, maybe having a lower limit if you're concerned that your ex is going to do nothing, that can also be helpful. But
sometimes you just can't control what the other person does. And this is some, this is a conversation that I have, especially with my female clients, because, you know, as the mom, I'm so used to maybe controlling everything in the household, and it's, you know, it's, I run it, it's my way, it's my decision sort of. And it's like, wait a second, but I can't control how they're parenting in that household. I can't control what clothes they're wearing, what food they're eating, how much screen time they're getting. You know, you just can't. And it's part of, you know, accepting that in this process is like, you have to just let go of that. You can control what happens in your home, the presents that you buy, you know, the gifts that you give, but sometimes you just have to let it go for your own mental health.
Right. Yeah, I think so. Now, do you think, okay, the holidays, is that like a good time or a bad time to start preparing for a divorce? Because we know the holidays are a little stressful. And sometimes, you know, it's like, I'm never doing that again, right? With that,
it can
family.
Make a lot of people want to leave their marriages probably at the end of, you know, the holiday season. And it's funny, we always say that, you know, January is divorce month here in Canada, I will say in Canada, because it is just, my phone is ringing off the hook because I don't know if it's New Year's resolutions or they've just gotten through the holidays. They just wanted to get through it. Yeah. And then they've already made that decision. Do I think it's a good idea to, you know, make it then?
I think a lot of people know going into the holidays.
Right.
And then it's just that, okay, we're going to give our kids one last good final memory of us as a family, and we'll, you know, pick up the phone in January and start the process. So again, very person specific, but no, by December, I'm not getting any really new calls from clients unless it's, okay, can we talk in January once I get through the holidays? It's a hard time. So it definitely expedites things on the other side once you've gone through it and you know I'm never doing that again. But there is, I find, more than not, this real want and desire to give the kids a last and final good, you know, Christmas before you pull the wool out from under them or the rug out from under them, whatever the saying is, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I think, though, it does. The stress and whatever it is in an individual family, I find many women make that decision and they're like, okay, you know, this is it for this holiday, after this holiday. And a part of that New Year resolution, it's just it naturally occurring, I think, because of the calendar that people are like, all right, I've got to start something new for this new year.
Yeah.
Now, shifting gears a bit, do you guys mediate post-divorce issues?
Very good question.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly keep in touch with some clients on an ongoing basis. Again, depending on the level of conflict, I'm often there for their annual review where we're looking at, you know, child support, and we're renegotiating that annually. Nice. So sometimes I'll be brought in for that. And then we will add on other things that have come up. As we know, children, their, you know, ages and stages are constantly changing, and we have to be adaptable. So absolutely, we're doing post. We try not to, of course. It's not easy to change things after the fact, but it's certainly doable. And I love when they come back to me. I love being able to facilitate, you know, the sort of ongoing conflict that arises.
Because it's going to come up. It's not, you know, once they're done and they've signed their papers, their divorce papers, and they have their agreements, it's just the beginning, right? Now they have to actually put that into practice.
And they've got
and
to live with it.
All kinds of things.
And they have to live with it. And often we can't live with our choices. We made poor ones because we simply didn't know better. And so then what? Right? And again, if the children's needs are changing, we need to change with them.
And I think that we've seen a lot, and, you know, we'll see at this time of year. We encourage everybody, you know, if you think there's going to be issues at the holidays, the earlier you're in, the better. That potentially we can help you, because I think that's where, whether or not, you know, and who knows, right? They agreed to a divorce and they just were like, yeah, we'll just agree with the general terms just to be done with it, or gave away too much thinking, you know, by not having good advice that they could change it later. But here now they are, and they're like, this holiday schedule isn't working.
Yeah.
And this is what, you know, we want, or I want, and I've got to go fight for it. And I think it comes up a lot over the holidays that they want to make a change for whatever reason. And so that's why I was wondering if, you know, they'll ever come to you and say, hey, can you help us work this out? Because
yeah, exactly. We have a clause in our agreements, a dispute resolution clause, that if something, they can't agree on something in the agreement, there's something that comes up, they'll come back to us. They'll come back to mediation to hash it out. Because we've already developed that relationship with them. We already know the history, and it can be very helpful. We can just get in there, spend an hour or two, get to the issue and get out.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that is wise, obviously, to try to mediate it, hash it out. And I think also, you know, when the kids get older, whatever, you know, life, right, intervenes and things maybe they didn't expect, like new blended families or extended families and opportunities maybe for a trip over that time, but then that is going to cut into the other parents' time.
Yeah, and if you have reasonable couples who can see that a trip is a wonderful opportunity for the kids, even if it means that you as the parent, the other parent left behind, is missing out, right? Again, it's just always putting the children at the forefront of every decision. And so, again, is it going to be difficult? Absolutely. If you get a couple that is willing to say, okay, well, this year I'll do it, maybe next year, you know, you can have it, or what's another thing that I can kind of give up in lieu of that? And again, that sort of horse trading and a little bit of
flexibility. I think that flexibility is your best friend, because there's always going to be something that comes up in your life that you're going to want. So when they have an ask, you know, like it's easy to dig your heel. Well, maybe it's not so easy, but to dig your heels in is often the first sort of instinct and say no, and know it's my parenting time and you can't cut into it. But then I always remind them, you have a lifetime of co-parenting together. There's going to be all kinds of things that you're going to want, accommodations you're going to want. So just be flexible.
Yeah.
I think, yes, flexibility is very easy for us to say, as we know, not always easy for our listeners and the parents to put into place, because I'm sure you've heard this, but I'm always the flexible one.
I always give in. Yeah,
I know. And I know that our clients feel that way, and it's hard, but I also, as you know, you realize very quickly when you have children is 18 comes awfully soon. And then there's still a lifetime of opportunities to have that time with them. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like so scarce that you're not going to have more opportunities. You hope, right? I mean, that's what we're all hoping for, of course. Yeah. But I think that's a difficult thing to see as well.
Very, very. And for the most part, people operate from this scarcity mentality.
Tug of war mentality. Yeah. It's my time. No,
well,
my
and, time. And because you're now sharing this precious 18 years only, you don't get all of the time. That when somebody wants to take even more of your time, you do want to dig your heels in and go, no effing way am I going to give up my time. You've already stolen half of it.
Right.
And so I completely understand the motivation behind it. But again, it's just that reminder, would your kids really have fun on this trip?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Well then, you know, off they go, because that is really important for them to experience new things, to get out in the world and have these opportunities. And
even if you're not there,
even if you're not there,
but you can still be supportive of it. Yeah. And that's a hard one to do, right? Being supportive. I've had clients who their kids are going off to Hawaii with mom. Dad can't go because guess what? They're separated. And I say, you know what? It's okay for you to be excited about a trip that you're not going on, because it means something to the kids.
Yeah.
For you to be excited with them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Which is, you know, hey, the parenting is not for the faint of heart or sissies, right?
Neither is co-parenting. Definitely not.
Right, which is that whole other level. Like now you got to be uber tough and really there for your kids with those difficult decisions. But this has been a great conversation, ladies. It's so fun to have you on. And but before we go, because I can't believe our time is almost up, I would love to hear from each of you if you could impart on our listeners what you've learned about women and their resilience through your career and experience.
You know, I always say to my clients, you are going to be shocked at, you know, especially my female clients, at the woman that is looking back at you in the mirror 1 year from now. 2 years from now. You know, time is going to be your best friend, because, you know, what's important to you right now might completely change, and you have no idea, you know, what your life will hold. You have all these new opportunities now. You have a sort of a second chance to chart your own course. And it can be a really beautiful, empowering thing if you let it.
Yeah, that's really nicely put.
Thank you.
And I had an idea, and then I got so into yours, and I totally forgot what I was going to say. You know, we as women are so resilient, and we are so good at putting, like, I think I've already mentioned this, but putting everyone's needs ahead of ours. And that really serves in divorce when we focus on the kids. But you do have to pause and focus on yourself. And congratulate yourselves on the hard things that you have done, because that reminds you that you can do hard things, because they're going to keep coming. And so building on that, it's like muscle memory almost, right? You have to build these new traditions, these new habits. And we don't do a good job of celebrating those little victories. And I think we could do that more often. It seems so indulgent to us as women, I think. But if we don't stop and high-five ourselves every once in a while for the stuff we've done, we will get burnt out. So be kind to yourself, go with grace, and really just be so proud of everything that has been accomplished, that you have survived, because it's tough out there in the divorce world, and we all get to see it, and we keep doing this work because it's so meaningful. But yeah, women are incredible, and I'm really honored to be one, quite frankly. So keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. And lastly, Alex and Amanda, where can our listeners find you both for more information and resources?
Yeah, so you can go and find us on Instagram, Dirty Laundry Podcast. And also Alex's practice is Midtown Mediation, and I'm Forest Hill Mediation.
Yeah.
If you want to hear more.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much. And we have reached the end of our show today. Thank you so much, Alex Howard and Amanda Silver, for joining us to discuss navigating the holidays in divorce, creating an agreement that works for you and your family, and managing unique co-parenting challenges during the holidays.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it's been a pleasure. It.
Oh, thank you both. Listeners, if you or someone you know is going through divorce or is thinking about a divorce in the Northeast Florida area, please reach out to us at floridawomenslawgroup.com. You'll find our practice areas and the link to our website in the show notes, as well as Alex and Amanda's links. Thank you for listening.